Hi, I'm Sadia Tariq, and you're listening to Dhani, the podcast. Today's guest is Ahmed Ali Ehsan. We have him on the podcast as part of our emotional intelligence / emotional quotient series. This is an excerpt of the talk that he held for us yogis, and I have converted this into an audio podcast. Thank you for being here, thank you for your continued support, and thank you for listening to this.
Thank you, thanks for inviting me and being part of this group. So very quickly, my name is Ahmed Ali Ehsan. I'm currently in the oil and gas sector, based in Singapore. Been in the corporate world for around more than 13 years now. Of course, born and grew up in Pakistan, and then just did an MBA in France, and then been working across multiple conglomerates, but right now in the oil and gas sector with General Electric. So I think today or this week, some of you or maybe all of you have been part of this group and talking about emotional intelligence. So I think for me, I can spend some time today to share some of my experiences, how that's affected some of us, most of us. And I think the importance of that within the corporate sector, which of course goes on to affect us in our personal lives as well. And I think that's just been re-emphasized or reiterated in the last 18 months since the pandemic, right? So I think if we just take a few steps back and we talk about emotional intelligence in general, it's really the ability to manage working with people, right? So it sounds very simple, but within each and every corporate, they have their core values. So I'll quickly touch upon, let's say, some of the values that we leverage on in our day to day, or we're sort of tuned to work in that. And it might resonate with some of you more than others. So we have around five pillars, and I'll very quickly run through them. So the first one around that is self-regulation. What that means is, how are we managing our responses? How are we managing our emotional responses? What are we doing about certain biases that we have, certain opinions that we have? Because end of the day, it is all around how you work with people, whether they're working for you, whether they're a line manager, whether they're part of other teams that you work with, you have customers, etc. I've predominantly spent time in sales, so it's been constant human interaction. I think nowadays very few roles are left which work in isolation, right? So I think that's the first bit, self-regulation. The second part is self-awareness, and we're working a lot within the organization to have individuals know what their areas of development are, what their areas of improvement are. Are you self-aware of what you're doing well, what you need to do well? Because there are a lot of let's say dark spots there, to say that it could bring out certain elements like arrogance, if you understand that I'm Mr. Know-it-all or Miss Know-it-all, right? So it's more about are we self-aware? Are we sort of looking into ourselves and on a day-to-day basis working on something that we've been told that requires a certain element of improvement, or we're self-realizing it, right? The third part is more on self-motivation. What motivates us? I think most of you here, maybe meditation or yoga is part of that. It probably motivates you. It's prayer for some, it's exercise for some, it's reading for another one. So I think that's that's something that we've been also talking about with the extended teams, right? So if that's something that motivates us, what are we doing to enable it? Or do we always have the excuse to say that, hey, we're just swamped with work, and then we have a personal commitment on the weekend, we need to do our family course, and that's it. And we don't find the time to self-motivate us. But I think the first element is, do we even know what motivates us in general? Just going out for a walk would be one for me, right? So I guess everyone has their own. The fourth pillar that we rest on is social. Our people, and not everybody likes to be like that, but you know, it's more around, are they making the conscious efforts to network? If somebody's shy, are we encouraging them enough to go public speaking, or you know, giving them the opportunity to sit amongst a group and share their thoughts, share their perspective? So I think that's also one. But I've left my favorite to the last, which is empathy. And why I say that is because, you know, probably my understanding of empathy maybe 5 years ago was being aware of people and their feelings, and kind of, you know, getting into their space where to find a common point and kind of connect with them. But now I realize that it's gone much broader. It's about understanding their circumstances. It's about understanding their situations, personal, professional. It's about understanding their challenges as well. And we all have them, right? But I think some appreciation of empathy I've also learned recently is more around the social and cultural differences. So I think in a workplace where you're working with an organization which, you know, has headquarters in the US, and you know, you have people all over Europe, and you're working here, there are different cultures, and there are different perspectives that those cultures are bringing. Now, it's one size does not fit all. So you know, how do you customize yourself to work with people around you who have those different sort of elements? Now, I've again, you know, in the corporate workplace, and if you work for that long, you see empathic leaders and you see non-empathic leaders. Now, what you'd see probably of empathic leaders would be like, you know, they're building a sense of belonging. They're driving connectivity. They are defining a purpose in terms of the way that you move in. But at the same time, on the contrary, you'd probably see disconnected, disjointed teams. There's lack of clarity. And that really is something that a lot of organizations are struggling with, which is, do we have the right culture? But the right culture is only going to be an output of the people that form it, right? So that's where it's sort of being very, very difficult with leaders who are not empathic. And that's something that, you know, something that's being worked on. Now, I think a big part of that is how we interact at home as well. You know, what we learn, how we spend, we probably spend 40, 50 hours nowadays, even more with the pandemic. And also, I think all the habits that we form, the conversations that we have, we do bring them home, or for nowadays, we do it at home anyway. So I think it's more around, we kind of embed it into our own family values. What are our, for example, religious views, or, you know, it's a part of our social interaction, social upbringing. I was talking about self-giving, or, you know, do we give ourselves enough time? Do we invest enough effort and energy into what motivates us? And I think a lot of us, and that brings me to the second part, where is that, you know, some of us might be invested at home totally with kids. Some of us might be looking after an elderly. And what that does is, I mean, we're doing it by choice. We're doing it because, you know, that's where we are. We, of course, doing it for a loved one. But during the process, what it's probably doing is it's a robotic lifestyle that we're going into, which eventually could lead to something called compassion fatigue. Now that's something where it's extremely important, one, to realize that, you know, we're doing it out of choice. We're doing it again, as I said, for our loved ones, but it is taking a toll on us. It is consuming us. It is taking a part of us away from us. And for that, you know, what could we do? I believe the first or foremost is setting your own boundary, right? So sometimes, you know, as I said before, you know, the calendar is full, you know, we have a task to do. We have to send the kids to school. We have to take them to their football practice. We have to look after an elderly, and there is a medical need, et cetera, et cetera. But you have to define that me time. Where do you do that? It's the part that is around self-care. What will you do for self-care? Would you go for an exercise? Would you attend a session of yoga? Would you do gardening? Whatever helps you. But the other part is what we shy away from is asking for help. And we've seen that a lot with our people, where this is defined as a moment of weakness. If we're going to someone and we're going to go to them and say that, hey, this is what's going on with me, we probably feel that, you know, we're going to be made fun of, or this person is not at strength to run the what might be in another definition a daily life. So I think that asking for help is where you know, raising your hand is becoming more and more important, and not a lot of us do that, right? So the other part that, you know, we're encouraging in general as well at in personal lives as well, there are certain elements or certain people which have a positive influence, so connect with them more. It's okay to say probably no to somebody who does not bring that to the table. So, you know, are we engaging with the positive influencers around us? And you know, all these things, again, you know, they have relevance in the corporate world, but I personally believe they also have a relevance in our personal life. So on that need help part, I'm just going to quickly share a personal story as well. So round about the same time last year, I moved to Singapore, and I inherited a team, and there was a lady in Australia, in Sydney, who she was part of the team. Now, she had a baby, her first baby, and at the same time, Sydney was in lockdown. She wasn't going to work, and because of social distancing rules, there was no house nanny or house help that she would get, right? Now, this is a perfect recipe of somebody who, again, needs to attend to a newborn child, an individual who's stuck within the boundaries of her house because of the rules. So, you know, she can't do much about it. And then she has a full-time job, to which she was new, by the way. So she wasn't a seasoned person in that role or job that she was doing. And then to top it all, she has a new line manager in the form of myself. So that probably makes it even more challenging for her, right? Now, in that entire scenario, you know, there are certain things that were in control. We're in control of myself, more in control with the people that she worked with. And it's a matter of, you know, literally a few conversations is all it took, a few moments of understanding it is all it took to eventually decide that, you know, the deliverables, business deliverables, et cetera, they need to happen. They need to happen in every organization. But how we work around them to make sure that she had her own space with the baby, et cetera, you know, we just kind of sat down with her and redefined what she needs to do. We redefined the working hours that suit her with the baby. And she was a single mom. So, you know, if she's not getting a support of her spouse at home, you know, it even makes it more difficult. So it was really about understanding the circumstances which are personal, so understanding circumstances which are let's say by law she wasn't able to go to work, etc. She would have otherwise, you know, probably thought of dropping her kid to the daycare and then going to work, and you know how life was probably 18 months ago. But then it was all about customization and, you know, how we could adapt to her needs and kind of get it through. And again, you know, over there, don't get me wrong, we did set boundaries. We did say that, you know, this could last 6 months. We revisited and then it lasts another 6 months. But at some point in time, when you feel appropriate, when the team feels appropriate, we will communicate to people so that other people who are kind of pulling her way do not feel agitated. There was a roadmap. There was a plan. Now, that all wouldn't have happened had she not raised her hand. We would have been in the drill. We would have been in the Monday to Friday, you know, expecting her to be available for all those calls. And being in Australia, being in Sydney, sitting 15 hours away from our headquarters, being there. And that time zone challenge, time zone difference is been a significant one. It's been a significant one, which has consumed a lot of us. But I think probably if you've had a week of emotional intelligence conversations, you probably heard a lot of how people are managing that. So I think, you know, again, that's just, I'm just trying to share some of my personal stories, but then more so, you know, what I feel or what my perspective of emotional intelligence is. So I'll just pause here and I'll give it back.
Thank you, Ahmed. Thank you. Useful indeed. Anybody who has a question, please shoot away. Unmute yourself, please. And then once that's done, then we'll resume. We'll start our practice. Anyone? I just have a question, however, here before anyone else comes in. I was just thinking that, you know, when you said that you have to raise your hand for help often, the kind of help that we are expecting is not extended. So is this something where our expectations are sort of wrong or high or whatever? Or is it that we should still raise our hands? A broken hand also.
Yeah, I see that broken hand. No, so I think it's if it's not being heard, there is a perspective that rests on the other side of it, right? Which is that I think in that few things that are undervalued or undermined is that and you know, coming from Pakistan, it's in our culture as well that running a house is considered as something that's very normal, right? And you have house help and everything. But I think there is a big piece there in terms of what goes in, right? And that's that realization. I think raising hand is one, but explaining the challenges and explaining the struggles of what happens in the life of a homemaker, for example, and I'm just taking an example here. It's a matter of communication as well. So how effectively are we communicating how the day is spent, right? And now it might be easy to say that, hey, you know, kids, you know, that this is the duty and we're supposed to do, but, you know, is there a fair share of the entire household in that? You know, in, and again, I'll go back to that culture where it's expected that, you know, this is where the mother sort of comes in and takes charge. Well, there is a role for both, right? And that being realized needs to be there. I mean, yes, there is that bit where, you know, in a traditional way, you know, there is one person who will be the provider and the other one will take care of that. But sure. I think we all fairly understand the challenges of the provider, right? So the hours spent at work, probably some travel, the mental stress and kind of making ends meet and paying the bills and all that, it's there. And I think I'm not trying to undermine that. But it's also part of that. That is that bit, I think, is well understood. Now, there's a different set of challenges that lies on the other side. Are they well understood, well explained? Probably there's a gap.
Sure. I get that. Yeah. Anyone else before I let him go?
I don't have a question. Sure. I just want to say that I like the phrase compassion fatigue.
which means you are fatigued.
Spot on.
Anyone
that's
else?
The first part, self-realization of being under compassion fatigue. I think that's
well
where it starts.
Said. Well said.
It makes you feel less guilty.
I also feel that the younger generation, like my son, would be a part of. With his wife, he will do what is required, you know, not just work, but be with her emotionally also.
Mm. Yeah, it seems to be a generational thing as well.
Yes, it's a generational thing.
Sure. Yeah, good point.
Yeah, I think, and I could say that, you know, we weren't taught this in school or university, but I can tell you that today there is a curriculum around it, because there's so much information, there's so much data, there's so much research that they feel that they could construct an entire curriculum around this. So it's happening. Probably, you know, when we went, it was all about the economics and maths and stats of the world, right? But coming to the workplace or even otherwise, personally, you understand, hey, this was a very imperative piece that was missing. So you self-learn. I think that's what we're sort of pushed into.
Sure. Yeah. One last question, guys. Go ahead.
So could one of you, Sadhya or the speaker himself, just briefly touch upon when you talk about self-regulation, and I know it's a huge subject to talk about, what exactly are we, how are we managing on self-regulation? What does it encompass?
Ahmed, you can go ahead because I keep talking about it anyway.
Okay, no, I was saying I can take a go at it and then I'll pass it over to you. So, I think self-regulation, again, I think it means different for different people, but how it's really important is how do we interact with people, keeping our opinions or biases aside. And that of course means that sometimes, you know, we all have a different relationship with different people that we make. Meet some people, you know, because of the relationship that we have or they're part of our family, we have a different sort of relationship. But then others, and I speak more on the corporate side as well, because you interact with a lot of new people. That means you're interacting with a lot of new perspectives, a lot of new learnings that they're bringing to the table. Are you wise enough to put a certain bias aside, a certain opinion? This, as I say, you know, the first impression is the last impression. Are you putting that first impression aside and giving them a second chance and a third chance to see what they're wanting to say or what they're actually meaning to say? So I think for us or for put that in the corporate, it's different. But then if you have a circle around you, you feel comfortable around it, it's all about managing emotional response. Some people are more emotional than others. Some people are more direct or abrupt than others. Others are more laid back and they're thinking about it. Now, you know, we have that culture where if you're on your feet and you're responding quickly, it's a way of self-promoting, but is it really the way? You can sit back, think about it, and, you know, articulate your response. And I'm not saying that I'm the best person to do that, probably not. But that articulation could take time. And that's one of those things that I was talking about earlier, that, you know, you can spend some time with yourself, telling yourself, you know, where do I need to work on my own self? Where is that point of weakness where I could work? You'll probably tend to work on some and not on the others. But to me, it's more around managing your emotional response, holding opinions aside, biases aside. Something like that.
Brilliant. Thank you.